Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Please note that if this year we use your question, which is postmarked any time between now and December 31st, you will get not the usual $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get, in addition, $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, back on its old wayward and spontaneous path, Information, Please, tonight pops up with its tried and true trio, John Curran of the New York Sun, Franklin P. Adams, and Oscar Levant, plus our old friend, that eminent freehand artist of the English language and director of the forthcoming feature film Song of Russia, Mr. Gregory Ratoff. Now, we're going to begin with a question from Mrs. Elizabeth Merrill of Detroit. These anniversaries, gentlemen, all occurred in the month of November, the one we're in now. What does each commemorate? Now, the first is a 25th anniversary. Mr. Ratoff.
Of the Soviet government in Russia.
Any alternative answers, Mr. Kieran?
November 11th, 11 a.m., 1918, the signing of the armistice for World War Number One.
That's quite right. That's the 25th anniversary, Mr. Ratoff, and now the 26th anniversary. Mr. Levant?
The commemoration of the Soviet Revolution in Russia.
Yes, that would be right. Celebrated on
November 7th.
And a 62nd anniversary. Mr. Adams?
That might be Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
I don't think...
No, it would be more than
that would be considered...
That's also in November.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it wouldn't be a 62nd anniversary,
Republican victory in New York State, Lieutenant Governor. Could be 62 years since, I don't know.
You could argue. Mr. Adams?
I was born.
That's right. You were born. And you aren't as old as the Gettysburg Address, are you?
Pretty near.
It may only seem that way. Yes, Mr. Adams, to whom we wish all luck and good health, was born November 15th. Put this on your cards, ladies and gentlemen. November 15th, 1881, and would be glad to receive presents for the next 15 days. So you thought that you were confusing yourself with the Gettysburg Address.
Is that tonight, November 15th?
Explain me. Yes,
that's
tonight.
Better than I am.
Try this one from I. Ashkenazi of Glendale, California. By the way, it seems to me we got that wrong because the initial guess on that was...
We got one out of three, actually.
No. We only got one out of three, and that sends $57 in war bonds to Mrs. Merrill and set of the Britannica. You knew how old you were, Adams. We would not have lost $57. Try this one from I. Ashkenazi of Glendale, California. Between what two countries is or was each of these rivers a boundary? In other words, I'll give you the river. You give me the two countries that are separated by the river. That clear? Let's get two out of three. And the first river is the Amur River, A-M-U-R. Separates, Mr. Ratoff?
It separates Russia and Japan. Amur separates Russia and China.
Try again. No, that's a little too vague. I don't think I can accept
Siberia.
Siberia, Mr. Levant, and what? And what?
Well, that's pretty good. He didn't get it out of tune. I got Siberia.
Yes, you did get Siberia.
Well, what's the clear Siberia? Siberia and Japan?
No. Siberia and Manchukuo.
Manchukuo. That was Siberia is Russia and Manchukuo is either Japan or China. That's what I'm telling you. Siberia is Russia and Manchukuo is either Japan or China. Anything you want.
You're just fighting your
they
way
are fighting
this
themselves
question.
For that. Manchukuo, that answer was right.
True enough, but Manchukuo is the answer and not China or Japan. Now, I hope that our listeners know...
What about Siberia? Is that Russia?
Yes, yeah. Siberia is right.
Siberia used to be a cold place when you were in Russia.
It still is.
I think you only got half of that right. You have to count it wrong. Now, how about the River Tweed, T-W-E-E-D, separates what countries? The Tweed, Mr. Kieran.
Well, the Tweed should separate England from Scotland.
It does separate England from Scotland. Yes, that's quite right. And the Dniester separates what countries? The Dniester, Mr. Ratoff.
Separates Russia, if is if Ukraine is Russia and separates getting Romania.
Quite, yes, that's quite right. Romania from Russia. That's right. Mr. Radov, has the Russian army reached the Dniester yet?
No. Well, not according to the 7 p.m.
No.
They'll be there, don't worry.
Oh, sure. Tomorrow will be yesterday, probably.
Mm.
Try this one from Mrs. Pauline Saltzman of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I love this question. It's a musical question, and it asks us to say what appropriate punishment of Adolf Hitler is suggested by each of these musical selections. What appropriate punishment? Now, there are going to be three of them. We ought to get two out of three. Let's have the first. Mr. Levant had his hand up at once.
That's a very wonderful closing of Götterdämmerung. Musically, it's wonderful. It more than portends the fall of the gods. It inflames. It burns down. And Brunhilde, with her horse, is supposed to dive in. But not in the Metropolitan. They want the horse.
And this would mean the punishment of Mr. Hitler would be burning with all his fellow Germans around him, as in the Götterdämmerung.
That's a good thing, though. It could be used for something else.
You couldn't use it for anything better than that, Mr. Levant. Now, how about the second selection? Mr. Adams.
Hanging.
Right. What's the musical selection being played?
They're hanging Danny Deaver.
In the morning.
In the morning. Very good. Yes. Now we have burning and hanging, which I personally find not quite satisfactory. Is that the third, Mr. Carn? Mr. Levant?
This is a delicate kind of torture. This is the raindrop prelude of Chopin, which probably means the Chinese torture, which will take a long time. Little drops of rain hitting Hitler on the head isn't going to hurt him very much, I don't think.
It depends how long you keep it up. I do agree with you, Mr. Levant, that all of these punishments have too much of the quality of mercy in them.
No, I didn't say that. I said about the rain.
Now we'll try the fourth from Helen Vale of Windham, New York. This is perhaps a pleasanter question. I'm going to ask you gentlemen to unite in dressing a woman for us by quoting lines of poetry that mention articles that she would wear, let's say three or four. Lines of poetry that mention any article of dress that a woman might wear, and we'll gradually costume her completely. Mr. Adams, I see you're in a daze already. Mr. Levant.
Don't waste any fat.
Don't waste any fat.
Yes.
Right. And the word is waste.
Not fat, waste.
No, waste. Very good. That gives us a waste. Mr. Adams?
She up and stabbed herself right in the corset.
Very good. Yes, from the comic song about Romeo and Juliet, that gives us a waste and a corset. You're specializing, gentlemen. You're specializing. Mr. Curran?
Costly thy habit as thy purse can buy.
But habit is too, perhaps, too
well,
general.
Well, it might be riding.
Yes, it might be. It might be. Mr. Levant?
You can see the River Nile on a clear day. Nylon.
Oh. Pretty good. Are there any others you can think of? Fat and scanty of breath, Mr. Kieran? Is there such a line from Shakespeare? And my sweet little Alice, blue gown, Mr. Adams?
As pants the heart.
The girls don't wear pants, do they?
They do in our house.
Well, I think we have this lady dressed with sufficient respectability now. Try this one from Eva Popkin of New York. Now, gentlemen, suppose your wives, I think it'd be better, insisted on an expensive fur coat. What inexpensive fur, because of its resemblance, would you substitute for each of the following? She wanted a mink coat, but you couldn't raise the cash for it, Mr. Levant. You'd give her what?
I'd give her mink.
You would, but it would be...
There was a short last week, a picture where they substitute something that looks like mink, but I couldn't remember the name.
It comes in handy if you do know the name. Mm. What, Mr. Adams?
Might be skunk.
No.
Now, I don't think that skunk looks like mink, does it?
It's a funny
name. I don't know.
I mean, you have to look at it awful quick. Dyed muskrat seems to be the trick, Mr. Radov, in case the situation should ever...
My wife only gets mink.
Only mink, eh? Lucky lady. Dyed muskrat is the answer. Now, suppose she asked for a beaver coat, and you wanted to substitute something much less expensive, Mr. Levant?
Kolinsky. I like the name.
Kolinsky? Kolinsky. What does Kolinsky come from? What kind of...
What's the Russian pronunciation of Kolinsky, Mr. Ratov?
Kolinsky, right?
Right. I think not. Unless mouton is the same thing, which is sort of, which is sheared lambskin with a curl taken out and dyed brown. It's messy an affair. I gather none of you gentlemen have even bought your wives cheap fur coats, much less good ones. Suppose she wanted, I guess this is the most expensive of them, isn't it? An ermine coat. And you want to give us a good substitute.
You're spitting her eye.
Catch some weasels out in winter.
What one?
Catch some weasels out in winter.
Weasels? Are they white?
Certainly they turn white in winter.
White in winter. Or Lapan, yes. I think you did very badly on that.
We saved a lot of money.
That sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Potkin and a set of the Britannic. Now, to use an old expression literally, this year has brought a lot of us down to earth for the first time. And I think our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, has something to say on that subject.
Yes, a lot of us town folks found out this summer with our Victory Gardens that nature expects a lot of help from man to make a seed grow up into a reasonable facsimile of the pretty picture on the package. A good example is that proud specimen, the Heinz Aristocrat Tomato. It didn't just happen to be a picture tomato. It was bred especially for rich color, juice, and flavor. Every Aristocrat Tomato that goes into Heinz Cream of Tomato Soup is grown from a special seed that took years of research to perfect. And Heinz tomatoes are left right on the vines till they reach their peak of ripeness. That's why Heinz Condensed Cream of Tomato Soup has its appetizing rich red color and zestful body. And that old-fashioned home taste comes from small-batch cooking and the generous blending of thick, wholesome cream. All you do is add an equal amount of milk or water, and you have the most delectable cream of tomato soup you ever tasted. What's more, just as it is, that rich, velvety puree makes a wonderful sauce to glorify low-point dishes like spaghetti, hash, and leftover meats. So, for a soup or a sauce, keep Heinz Condensed Cream of Tomato Soup always on your pantry shelf.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now we'll continue with a question from Arthur John Danishon of Rochester, New York. Again, get two out of three gentlemen. Who were or are the people who couldn't pronounce the following letters? They couldn't pronounce the sound sh, which is sh. Mr. Levant.
Is that the shibboleth test?
Well, who were the folks?
That was in the First Testament. That's a long book.
Yes, it was in the Old Testament, and they were a Hebrew tribe. Does anyone remember their names, Mr. Ratoff?
No, I'm thinking of other people.
You are?
But that was right, shibboleth.
Shibboleth is quite right. That was the test word that the Ephraimites couldn't pronounce, and they were picked off by the Gileadites because they couldn't say it. It was a kind of test word, as Mr. Levant says. Who are the people who can't pronounce F or L? Either one of those simple sounds.
The Japanese can't say L. They use that in the South Pacific at night. They use that.
That's quite right. For example, what would they say for Filipino?
Filipino. How do you, without the L? That's good.
Well, they can't pronounce the F either. They say Filipino. Filipino.
I could.
Are you sure they can't pronounce an F?
Well, I
don't know. I never was there, but my friend Professor Mo Berg has been there more than once with ball clubs, and he told me that Lefty O'Dool's name to the Japs was Lefty O'Dour.
Is that so? They can't pronounce it.
There's no S in O'Dour. Mo Berg's word on language is until contradictible
of you, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams?
How do they pronounce Fujiyama?
My gollies, how do they pronounce it? Do you suppose they move the... Because they move that mountain over to China every time they want to pronounce it? We may be all wrong about the F.
The so, L is right, though.
The L is right. You'll hear from Japan in the morning. Mm-hmm. How about people who can't pronounce V? Mr. Levant.
Ratoff.
Ratoff. Levant?
Test him.
I'll test him. How do you say Oscar's last name, Mr. Ratoff?
Levant.
Levant, sir. You know, it sounds better that way.
He's the answer to basic English.
He isn't the answer. He's the question. Try this one. I guess that gives us three out of three, as a matter of fact. Try this one from Kathleen Newton of Denver, Colorado. I'm going to give you the name of one man who played a part in the life of a glamorous lady of the past. I want you to name the lady.
and also another man, at least one, in her life. Is that clear? For example, well, I'll give you the first. Alfred de Musset, the French poet. What was the name of the lady, Mr. Rathoff?
George Sand.
George Sand, yes. And name another man.
Chopin.
Chopin, the famous pianist. Mr. Kieran, do you have another one?
No, I have another one.
Mr.
Liszt, although it's not... Liszt. Chopin was sore about that.
He was?
I think so.
Jules Sandeau.
Jules Sandeau. He's a dramatist, was he?
That's where she got her name from.
I guess that's right. None of these gentlemen was her husband.
She had children by her husband.
Goody, goody.
I don't know what that means.
Cleaning this up, are you? Well, it will surprise everybody to know that George Sand did actually have a husband. His name was Casimir Dudevant, and probably this is the first and last time it's ever been pronounced anywhere.
I know, yeah. Her name was Amelia Dudevant.
See, the things you know, Mr.
Well, about her, I know.
Well, that fixes up George Sand. Now, how about, here's a man whose name is Gregory Orloff. What, Mr. Rathoff?
Catherine the Second.
Catherine the Great, yes.
Yeah.
And did she have any other men in her life, Mr. Rathoff?
Yes. Potemkin. Prince Potemkin.
Yes.
Prince Grigory Potemkin.
Yes, and that sounds much stronger the way you say it. And did she have anybody else in her life?
She had about 200 more people.
Not true.
Really?
Well, I'll settle for 100.
Amazing women, these Russians. Yes, there were a number of others, including Gregory's brother, I suppose, Alexis Orloff.
Orloff, yeah.
Took on a whole family. And Platon Zubov was another, Count Saltykov.
I don't think it's gentlemanly to go any farther.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think it's fair to Catherine. How about Horatio Nelson? She played a part in the life. Mr. Kieran?
What? Me? Or Mr.
I thought you had your hand up.
No.
Mr. Adams?
Lady Hamilton.
Lady Hamilton. Now, can you name another man that played a part in her life?
Yes, the gentleman that married Lady Anne Hamilton. Lady Hamilton.
Yeah, what was his name?
Oh, he was a boy around Naples.
Yeah, his name was Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Darndest coincidence. Yes, another one was Charles Greville. Sir William Hamilton was the man that she married. That gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Mrs. Estelle V. House of Denver and get 2 out of 3. Where in poetry do you find these phrases, which are somewhat similar? The first is sweet and twenty. Sweet and twenty. Mr. Kieran.
You will find that, and it's an interpolated song in Shakespeare. In delay there lies no plenty, then come kiss me, sweet and twenty.
That's right. Very good.
And
what's the next line?
Love's the stuff will not endure.
No, youth's the stuff will not
youth's
endure.
Both
true, but youth's the stuff will not endure is what counts in Shakespeare. And then the next phrase is 2 and 20. 2 and 20. Mr. Adams, was that your hand?
No.
No.
Yes, Houseman.
Houseman's right. Can you give us the line?
And I am 2 and 20, and oh, 'tis true.
That's right, yes, very good. From A Shropshire Lad by Houseman. Did you...
He was only 1 and 20 in the first line.
Yeah, yeah. He moved down in the second line. Did you know the whole stanza, Mr. Kieran?
No, this one.
When I was 1 and 20, a wise man said to me.
It's a beautiful stanza, anyway, and folks, some of you folks might want to look it up.
I heard a wise man say.
Yes, the heart out of the bosom was never given in vain, and so forth. Now we've got sweet and 20, 2 and 20. How about 4 and 20? Mr. Adams.
Blackbirds baked in a pie.
Those are the ones. I guess they're the only 4 and 20 folks around. 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. Now, Al Simon of New York City sends in this very interesting question, which is divided into 2 parts, and we have to get both parts. We're going to have a series of tunes played, and these tunes, which will be played one after the other without any intermission, should suggest to you invasion routes that the Allied armies might follow. They're going to be 2 different sets of routes. Here is the first. Now, that should give you the complete route of the invasion, Mr. Levant.
Well, the first is the Russian song, the Isit Mission to Moscow Picture. It's the army song, I think, the Russian army song.
I think it is.
Quite a wonderful song.
Very good song, called Meadowland.
Pardon?
Called Meadowland.
Meadowland. I didn't know that. And the next is a Polish, either Krakowiak or folk dance by Unia. No? It's a Polish dance.
Yes, that's right. So we have Russia, Poland. And the third?
It's in space, I think.
The third is Berlin.
Yes, the fear of space, Germany. Russia, Poland, Germany, an excellent invasion route. Now, how about an alternative invasion route? Mr. Kahn? That's a little more complicated, isn't it? Want to start on it, Mr. LeCran?
Well, Mr. Adams can start it.
All right, Mr. Adams.
Well, the first would be through France.
Yes. Right. Why do you say that, Mr. Adams?
Because that is the...
Madelon, isn't it?
I think that's the Sommet Muse.
Well, it's the song, the Madelon, French soldiers sang in the last war. Now, Mr. Brabant.
The second was César Franck, the last movement of the symphony, which is Belgium.
Why Belgium?
He was born in Belgium, which I can't account for.
Oh, but just happened to be born in Belgium. And the third?
From there on, the armies are on their own. I don't know.
We have to get the rest of that invasion route. We've got France, Belgium. Now, what was the third piece of music played?
Well, you might
guess it.
Well, what was it? I can't.
How about using your intelligence?
After Belgium?
After Belgium. Well, it was... Must I give it to you?
Netherlands.
No. What did you say, Mr. Adams?
The Netherlands.
The Netherlands, yes. What was being played?
Netherlands?
Something about the Dutch.
Play it again, John. Just that part.
Sounds like Off the Buffalo to me, a Dutch version.
It's a pretty little thing called In an Old Dutch Garden. In an Old Dutch Garden. That would be Holland. And the last one was what, gentlemen?
It wasn't Brooklyn.
You bet it was, and it was what?
Germany, obviously.
Germany is right, and what was the song called?
I don't know. I just figured from Netherlands they're not going to Brooklyn.
well, the song was Marching Through Berlin. Now, the only thing that you were required to get was the actual route. You did get the actual route. You didn't know all the songs. I guess that just about passes you by, gentlemen, and passes us on to... I guess we'll wait for the next one or two for a moment or two. Now, here's our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who contends, and rightly so, that man's inclinations in matters gustatory don't change much over the years.
You're right there, Mr. Fadiman. Fashions come and go in matters of food along with everything else. But the old-time dishes that made reputations for good home cooks generations ago are still going strong. Now, you take Heinz's old-fashioned cream of tomato soup, for instance. Incidentally, that's the way the old recipes always started. You take. For tomato soup, they advise you to take only sound, fully ripe tomatoes. Simmer down till thick. Blend with heavy, rich cream. They didn't say how much cream. Any cook worth her salt would know you poured in plenty. Well, Heinz cream of tomato soup is made to these same time-honored rules. In fact, Heinz goes even further. They use their own specially bred tomatoes, luscious beauties fairly bursting with juice and flavor. And Heinz cream of tomato soup is made in small batches. That's why every kettleful is so perfectly seasoned with the aromatic zest of subtle spices. Nowadays, all the old-fashioned goodness of Heinz condensed cream of tomato soup is yours in practically no time flat and for only a few of your precious ration points.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Now, gentlemen, will you try this one from Leroy Taylor of Memphis, Tennessee? Get 2 out of 3. Whose ambitions were blocked by the following people? The first people are Dmitri and Theodore. Now, they blocked somebody's ambitions. Mr. Ratta. Who?
Brother Karamazovs?
No, I don't think so.
Boris?
Boris Goodenough is right. Yes. Dmitri was Tsarevich. Uh-huh. How do you say that again?
Tsarevich.
And Theodore the First was the young Tsar, and both were the sons of Ivan the Fourth. And what Boris did was to murder the former and succeed the latter. Now, how about Malcolm and Fleance? Whose ambitions, Mr. Kieran, did they block?
They were in the way of Macbeth.
They were indeed.
And Fleance escaped, but his father was killed.
Yes. Malcolm was whose son?
Malcolm was the son of the...
Duncan.
Duncan.
The king, and Fleance was the son of...
Banquo.
Banquo, that's quite right, from Macbeth. Brian and Wilson, whose ambitions were blocked by Brian and Wilson? Mr. Adams?
Hughes.
No, Mr. Adams?
Mm-hmm.
Pick a man out of your hat, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran?
Brian and Wilson.
Yes, that's right. By working together, they blocked the ambitions of an American statesman named Champ Clark. Champ Clark. You see, Brian, who was an instructed Clark delegate from Nebraska in 1912, threw his support to Wilson. And it was as a result of that that Wilson got the nomination. Well, I guess that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Taylor and a set of the encyclopedia. Charles Cogan of New York sends this one in. Suppose we ask for 3 quotations from song or poetry that mention 2 seasons of the year. That is, each quotation must mention at least 2 seasons within the same line or 2 lines connected. Is that clear, Mr. Adams?
Well, will you love me in December as you do in May?
Well, it mentions 2 months, but I mean 2 of the 4 seasons of the year. 2 of the 4 seasons. Mr. Levant?
Morning time and evening time and summertime and wintertime.
Yeah, good. Bessie was my woman now. That gives us one answer. Now, Mr. Kieran?
Fresh spring and summer and winter horn may move my heart with grief, but with delight, no more. Oh, nevermore.
That's beautiful. I never heard that. Shelley, that's a lovely one. Very good one. Mr. Adams?
Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by the sun of York.
That's a dandy, yes. And there's one I remember. In the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love, and in autumn and in winter and in summer, see above. Which might do equally well. I think we'll have time for this one from Charles C. Allen of East Durham, New York. Under what pseudonym, gentlemen, did each of these people write? I'll give you the name that they... You give me the pseudonym that they wrote under. I'll give you their real names. The first is... Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ratha. Alexei Maximovich Pieshkov. Mr. Ratha?
Maxim Gorky.
Yes, Maxim Gorky is right. How do you say his real name?
Alexei Maximovich Pieshkov. You did it right.
I did pretty good. Yeah. I learn on these programs. What does the word Gorky mean? Does it have a meaning?
Bitter.
Bitter, because of the life he lived, yeah. I suppose, mm-hmm. Full of suffering. Quite right. Famous Russian writer, Maxim Gorky. Grace Zaring Stone.
What?
Grace Zaring Stone. Under what pseudonym, Mr. Adams?
She wrote Escape.
She wrote Escape, famous novel.
Ethel Vance.
Ethel Vance, yes. The author of the famous anti-German bestseller, Escape. And François-Marie Arouet. Mr. Kieran?
Voltaire.
Voltaire. His real name was Arouet. How did he get the name Voltaire? Did he make it up?
He's supposed to have been taking some of the vowels out of his name and thrown in a couple of...
That's right.
Named after Winchell, he was. Voltaire Winchell.
Try this one from Nanny Foster of Dorset, Vermont. According to history or legend, what two brothers founded a city? What two brothers founded a city? Mr. Kieran.
Romulus and Remus.
Romulus and Remus founded what city?
Rome, 753 B.C.
And what three brothers founded an empire? Three brothers founded an empire.
Three?
Well, this is a tough one. It's Rurik, Sinias, and Truvor, who were supposed to have founded the Russian state in 862. How about two brothers who led a 40-year march? What two brothers led a 40-year march? It's Adams.
Hannibal and Hasdrubal. They weren't brothers.
I think they were father and son, unless I'm greatly mistaken. Mr. Kieran?
Moses and his brother.
Moses and Aaron, yes, in Exodus. That's quite right. Well, that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Ratoff, for adding to the fun this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $171 in war bonds and stamps and three sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, along with Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, we'll have as our guests the playwright-producer Russell Krauss of Life with Father fame and the brilliant dramatist Moss Hart, whose new Air Force play, Winged Victory, opens next Saturday here in New York for the benefit of Army Emergency Relief. Remember, send your...